Hi there, this is Carolyn Mark, and you're listening to CJAM, CJAM, Windsor, Detroit.
Down in Death Valley on the day of the dead, hit the lowest point in North America.
It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
My guest today, Alan Williams, writes for Chambers of Rock, a blog with rock news, reviews, and interviews. Alan is originally from England, but the automotive industry, in which he's been a part of for many years, brought him to Michigan, and he's here to talk about music, bands, and his Chambers of Rock blog. Alan, welcome to You Talking to Me.
Thanks, Big JD. How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's great to have you on the show, finally, because I know we've been talking about this for a while.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Good to be here.
So tell us about your background in the automotive industry. As you know, that's a big deal around here on both sides of the border.
Well, exactly. Yeah, well, I used to work for a tier one supplier in the UK that was actually supplying product to North America, actually a Cadillac product. And I just got talking to the right guys in the right place, so to speak. And I threw a corny line out there, if you will, when I just turned around and said, well, you know, if you guys are struggling, give me a shout and I'll come and help you. And at that point, my boss-to-be said, well, send me your resume and let's set it up. And next thing I know, that was in April of 2000, and in August of 2000, I was over here and living in the USA. So, yeah, working for Safety Restraint Company in Auburn Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty much based in the Auburn Hills, Rochester Hills area ever since, you know, work-wise, but living in Sterling Heights, Michigan right now.
And so tell us about your background in music in England.
Well, I started playing bass about 15 years old. A bunch of friends of mine and myself, we were into a bunch of British bands, I guess the likes of Slade, Sweet, Status Quo, who never really broke it in the States or in Canada, I don't think. Thin Lizzy, of course, always a favorite, Deep Purple. And we just decided, well, look, other people are forming bands, let's have a go ourselves. And we didn't have anyone that volunteered to play bass, so I decided to volunteer to play bass. And after about a year of that, a friend of ours decided he'd like to pick up bass, and I said, great, then I can take up the drums. And I'd been messing around with a friend of mine's drum set, and I was definitely taken by it. And I'd always wanted to play the drums, really, but always thought it was way out of my price range. So drums wasn't too realistic at the time. But I switched to drums about 16, and I've pretty much been playing ever since, in and out of bands, you know. But it's quite different over there to here.
So how did you find the music scene here in Michigan when you first came, as far as, you know, the local scene is concerned?
Very different, very different.
Yeah.
It's kind of ironic because the style of music that I like, it's obviously, you know, based in its roots of hard rock and everything, but I like a lot more of the melody in my rock music and catchy stuff and so on and so forth. And, of course, when bands like Journey, Styx, Toto, and the like started breaking through in England, I thought, oh man, you know, if I can go to America, it'd be great. You know, I'd be playing that stuff and it'd be perfect. But I come to Detroit and it's quite different because there's a lot more, grassroots style here, if you will. And I found a lot of the bands that I was trying to seek out here were more into playing kind of thrash or metal or alternative music.
Yeah.
It wasn't what I thought I'd be walking into, you know, but it was quite different. But eventually I met up with some people that were of the same mindset, and we started playing some songs and started getting sets together. And then you've got the struggle of trying to keep a band together. As soon as you have I don't know, more than four people in a band, it's always tough to try and hold that band together.
When you came to Michigan, as far as like the people, you know, that you met, were they kind of into the same type of stuff you were, or were they more geared toward the Detroit area rock?
Well, there was a lot of people trying to obviously make it. I mean, that was clear as day. There's a lot of people writing their own material, and all power to them. I mean, to me, coming from my hometown of Portsmouth, England, to Detroit, it was basically like it would have been the same as me moving from Portsmouth to England. To London. Portsmouth, England, to London, England, where it's much more happening scene. And Detroit is a very much happening scene on all levels. It really is. I mean, you know, I say about bumping into people that were playing mostly thrash or metal, as opposed to the kind of stuff that I'd really like to play. But there's so many acts that have come from this area, I guess, like, you know, Iggy and the Stooges and so on. And Alice, I guess, he did a lot of stuff here. So, you know, there's a lot of that almost like trash rock, if you will. But, yeah, you know, and then, of course, I learn about people like Mitch Ryder and so on. And of course, Bob Seger comes from here, too. He's a good old classic rocker.
Sure.
But, I mean, for me, it was quite different, quite interesting.
Now, do you mostly write about national acts, or what about local bands?
It's really a case of, I guess, trying to get the site off the ground, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And hence the reason why I've kind of stuck with more of the national acts. You know, because there's probably more demand for that. Perhaps I could be proven wrong if I was to switch to local acts and get more local acts, you know, on the side. But as it stands, I mean, I've got a lot of contact. I've made a lot of contacts in the PR world, I guess, and they are dealing with mostly the national acts. So
sure.
That's probably where I've stuck.
Do you get out much of the clubs? Are there any emerging local artists that you'd say to watch out for or anything like that? Or do you just, again, mostly stick to national acts as far as going out to some of the concert halls as opposed to going to clubs?
Well, when I first came over here, I was a single guy. Mm-hmm. and then I met my wife.
Enough said. No.
Or should I say my wife-to-be.
Sure.
But, you know, we started jamming together, and she plays keyboards, which I know is a topic we're going to probably discuss in future.
Absolutely, sure.
But, I mean, she plays keyboards, and she rocks in a style similar to John Lord, if you will. I mean,
okay.
She's absolutely awesome on the keyboards, but there you go. I'm biased, obviously. But, you know, we would go and see a lot of local acts. But, of course, the local scene around here is very much, there's a lot of cover bands, as well as bands that are trying to slot their own songs into a cover set. And then you've got the other bands that are purely original material, and they're struggling to obviously play the smaller venues, you know, places like down in Hamtramck and so on and so forth. But it's very different. I think most people were trying to play the cover stuff just so they can kind of compensate themselves, offset their salary situation. And obviously Detroit's had hard times with the whole automotive thing.
Sure.
Getting hit so hard. So a lot of my friends, they're saying the cover scene, you know, trying to get gigs has been tougher and tougher still, because a lot more the venues are trying to mix it up a lot more and have two bands a weekend as opposed to one band where they'd have the whole weekend. And they're also trying to mix in, say, a DJ as well as a band. So then, you know, the venue... The bar owners are basically trying to save money where they can as well, because they've been hard hit too. So it is tough right now. I can see that for sure.
Right.
But, I mean, as to local bands that are jumping out at me, it's kind of tough to call. I mean, there are a few bands around here that have been around, if you will, for a while, who are still getting high praise. There's a band called Room 13, who are quite popular.
Right.
I mean... We don't get out quite so much anymore because we've got two young kids too. So
sure. And do you still follow local artists from your hometown in England?
Well, I email back and forth to friends and so on and so forth, and it's nice to know. I have a drummer friend back in Portsmouth area who's actually the drummer for Joe Jackson's band.
Okay.
And his name is Dave Houghton. So when Joe Jackson played at Clutch Cargo's a few years ago and the reunion tour. I was down there at Clutch Cargo's in Pontiac checking that out.
So cool.
It's cool to catch up with the guys. So, but other than that, I have a friend called Steve Newman who has his own band called Newman who are based in the Portsmouth area, and they're trying to break through right now. They're getting more attention to them, you know, for themselves. They're playing festivals and so on across the UK now. So it's good. The guys actually released like about eight studio albums, or nine studio albums actually now.
Wow.
And yeah, again, just trying to break out and push it as far as I can.
So as you mentioned, you're also a musician. You started playing bass and then you got into drums. You told us a little bit about that story. What bass players actually influenced you when you'd started that?
Well, I mean, that was around the time when I was getting into Thin Lizzy, and it was possibly more from a showman point of view, but Philip Lynott, for me, he was like the all-round guy. I mean, he was fantastic in Thin Lizzy, and he was a great frontman, and his bass runs were, you know, it was just something else, and the whole Celtic connection there as well, the mm-hmm. Irish connection, was always impressive, and came across very well. And Roger Glover from Deep Purple, I mean, he was another one. But other than that, I obviously learned to appreciate people like Geddy Lee as time went on, and obviously Mike Levine from Triumph. So there's a couple of Canadian bands for you. How's that?
Yeah, right on. And then you got into the drums, and were you influenced by drummers from England again, or... That's where you were when you started playing, right?
Correct.
Drums
correct.
Too, so.
Yeah, very much so. My biggest hero, if you will, was probably Cozy Powell.
Nice.
Rest in peace, who's no longer with us. But I actually got the nickname of Cozy Owl because people knew that he was probably my favorite drummer. But he kind of got tagged with the old mercenary tag because he seemed to jump wherever it seemed to be the next happening thing. So, you know, I mean, I first saw Cozy play with Rainbow, Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow, and then I saw him, he left Rainbow, he hooked up with Michael Schenker Group, and I saw him with the Michael Schenker Group, and then he hooked up with Whitesnake. So I caught him with all of those bands, and he just seemed to jump around to one gig to another, and it always seemed to be a fairly high-profile gig before he hooked up in ELP as their replacement for Carl Palmer,
mm-hmm.
Keith Emerson and Greg Lake. So there was always Cozy Powell as probably my biggest influence.
Lost him too early as well.
For sure. Brian Downey as well from Thin Lizzy.
Mm-hmm.
Very underrated drummer in my opinion. And this may surprise you, but Bev Bevan from ELO as well. So very much those guys, big influence on me.
So you're telling us about your wife playing keyboards. She's a phenomenal player. And how did you guys meet?
Through a mutual guitarist friend. I placed an ad in the Metro Times selling the old English line, saying English dude looking to join form rock band. And I guess I got a lot of calls on that. And a lot of people were saying, you know, oh, yeah, we play hard rock and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, we don't do anything heavier than Metallica, and I'd get out there for the audition, and they're jamming stuff like Slayer and you name it. It was all guns going. So, but no, I mean, I hooked up with some guys here eventually that were, if you will, the right connection.
Mm-hmm.
Great guys and everything. We played some local gigs. We played, you know, everyone seems to play a bunch of private parties. We played some charity things. We played down in Pontiac at what's it called? Is it the Grand down there? But I can't remember the old venue there. We played a show down there for charity.
Mm-hmm.
We were in a band called Retrocraft, which was a little cheesy, but we seemed to play, if you will, a one-hit wonders or maybe songs that people probably wouldn't attempt.
Is that the band that you actually have a MySpace for?
That's the one.
Okay.
Retrocraft.
So listeners can check that out, Retrocraft.
There you go.
What got you interested in writing about bands and doing interviews? I know you started out writing for other online publications before starting Chambers of Rock, right?
Correct, yeah. Well, I mean, what started it for me is I've always been a bit of a trivia nut. So I've always been one of those people that's often classed as sad, where I miss the album sleeves, so the inner sleeve liner notes and stuff like that, where I just wanted to know who was playing on which album, that kind of stuff. So I always wanted to know who was involved in it, whether they were the guest guitarist or playing a solo on a on an album, that kind of stuff. So
yep.
I was, you know, deeply into it all. And I just noticed on a few of the rock forums that people were actually posting their own reviews of albums and gigs and so on and so forth. And I just basically got on the bandwagon, and someone happened to notice one of my reviews and liked the way I wrote and said to me, you know, would you be interested in contributing to About.com? And that was when I started writing for the classic rock section in About.com, mm-hmm. which I did for about 4.5 years. And after that, I switched over to, they changed the rules a little bit there and so on, and they kind of got funny about their contributors. And so I was looking for another gig, and Jeb Wright over at Classic Rock Revisited said he'd be interested in publishing some of my reviews. So I wrote briefly for Classic Rock Revisited, and then decided, well, you know, why not give it a shot myself? And basically, just to test the waters, I decided to start it as a blog site. And from there, I've been very fortunate to stick with a lot of my PR contacts and a lot of the musicians that I've made contact with over the years. And it's great because I've had some really good interviews.
It's pretty cool. You followed a passion of yours, but and you weren't necessarily educated in writing at all, creative writing or anything like that?
Not specifically. I mean, I always loved English at school. I mean, I really did. I loved it with a passion. I loved writing stories, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and always loved reading. So from that standpoint, I guess I've got that background.
Okay.
You know, so, but nothing specifically, no specific creative writing stuff.
And Chambers of Rock blog's pretty busy. Your stats are pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I'm quite pleased that I started in December 2009, and this year, I guess it just passed. Well, this last December on its 2-year anniversary, it just passed the 100,000 mark. In actual fact, just before the end of the year, I was very happy about that. Mm-hmm. It's just over 100,000, so I was very happy. And I think now it's around about 105,000. So. Not too shabby. Not setting the world on fire, I guess, but...
Hey, it's great stuff, and I really enjoy your reading your news and your reviews and stuff, and I also have to say that I really appreciate what you put on for Floor on the Floor, the documentary film that I'm working on.
Yeah, no, good for you. All power to you. I think that's going to be great.
Now, do readers prefer your reviews or your news items more over one or the other, or do you find they like everything equally, or...
I can't get a straight answer from my readers. That's the one thing that I don't understand, when so many people are coming there, but very few people actually comment. But the wonderful thing about it is that I really appreciate is how widespread the site obviously is. I mean, I get people writing to me from Sweden. I get people writing to me, people from Africa.
Wow.
I've had people from India. Mm-hmm. I've had people from Australia, New Zealand. Of course, people from England, connections there, as well as other people in England. And a lot of people have turned around and said that they've actually switched to reading my blog site for the news as opposed to other classic rock sites. So that's always pleasing, and I really appreciate that.
Sure, that's got to tell you something right there, for sure.
Yeah, I must be doing something right?
Yeah, tell us more about what we'll find on Chambers of Rock.
It's all about news, CD reviews, DVD reviews, gig reviews, when time allows, and interviews. The toughest thing is, of course, with the interviews, I mean, I'd really rather speak to someone rather than do an email interview with people, and I know there seems to be a lot of trend to do an email interview, and maybe that's the easy way out, because... The time it takes to write up these interviews afterwards is horrendous. And it can take an absolute lifetime sometimes to try and keep up with that, as well as writing the CD reviews, DVD reviews,
sure,
and keeping up with the news items. But I don't know. I always get a lot of thanks and praise, I guess, on the interviews that I do. People seem to like the interviews that I've done.
Good stuff. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about some of the interviews that you've done.
Sounds good.
Do you have an interesting career? You have an interesting life experience to share with others? If you'd like to be a guest on You Talking to Me, contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking to Me website. That's youtalkingtome.ca. The letter U, talking, the number 2, me, youtalkingtome.ca.
All right, we're back. I'm Big JD. You're listening to You Talking to Me. I have Alan Williams with me from the Chambers of Rock blog. One thing I want to ask you is how you go about finding content. Do you pull from other news sources? Obviously, you mentioned some of the PR firms and things like that. Is there somewhere in particularly you will find more of your news?
This is it. And anyone else that runs a rock site that has news items on it will probably tell you the same thing. You'll always get a certain amount of news items come to you through email, whether it's someone directly from a band that wants to share with you. I mean, I'm getting to know a bunch of musicians from the LA area, which is fantastic. I'm very grateful for that through interviews that I've done and getting introduced to others. But very often, it kind of goes quiet, very quiet, very dead. And, of course, the leading up to Christmas, there was very few news items. But, you know, I wanted to try and stay on top of it so that people would, you know, still be interested. And sometimes I wonder, and you ask the question, what do readers prefer? Do they prefer the reviews or do they prefer the news items?
Right.
And that is something that's very, very hard for me to actually read. It really is. And I wish I could read it better. And I've actually put that question out there to readers and haven't really got a straight answer on it. So, it's just something I just keep plugging away at. But the tough thing about it is it's very time consuming. From basically what I will do is I've got a whole bunch of web links, obviously it's saved as favorites. And I literally, it can be a case of if I've got very little coming in terms of press releases from the PR contacts, I'll just start hitting up all the websites. And literally, it's a case of searching through all my websites that I've saved. And as I go through each of them, you know, hopefully I find something new that's not been plugged anywhere else. Occasionally, something will jump to my mind and think, oh, well, how about checking out so-and-so? You know, I'll think of a mental connection between one artist and another. And I think, oh, you know what? I haven't got their site saved as a link, so I'll suddenly jump over there and get content from there. So that's pretty much it. I'm kind of basically like trawling the various artists' websites for links and news updates. And, you know, sometimes I'll get something that's kind of almost like an exclusive before even the PR people have got hold of it to post it. That's always fun.
Now, you've interviewed so many great, great people and great bands. Maybe you can tell us a few stories or something about, you know, whatever pops into mind about some of these people. We're talking Thin Lizzy and Bad Company and Foreigner, right. Triumph and Ian Gillan, Michael Schenker. So many great bands. Mick Box, Uriah Heep, always been a favorite band of mine. I always seem to lean toward the English rock bands as well. What comes to mind when, you know, somebody mentions this huge list to you? There must be some things that kind of stick out, some stories, or maybe that even you've met some of them when they've come to town.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. And one of the things that usually does come about, as you say, is once you get to interview these guys, I mean, 9 times out of 10, they'll turn around and say, you know, we've got to meet up when we play Detroit, you know? Let's hook up and let's get to meet up and finally put a face to the name and the voice. So, you know, it's always cool when that happens. I must say I'm a little bummed out that Uriah Heep have been missing out Detroit on the last 3 or 4 tours that they've actually done, which, you know, they've started hitting the U.S. again for the first time. I think it started around about, 2008 or 2009. It's the first time they've been back here since, I think, early 2000s, you know. They seem to have been missing out Detroit, and the Chicago dates or the Cleveland dates tend to fall on a midweek day, and it's always tough with the day job, you know.
And you're somewhat tight with Mick Box, and do you not have an interview in the works with him?
It's been on off. I mean, Uriah Heep. Here's the thing: they've been really picking up a lot of popularity again globally, and all power to them because I love the newer material. It's fantastic. And it's like, talk about, you know, blow off the cobwebs and everything. These guys are like rocking better than ever before in my mind. It's very, very good. And Mick and I got talking on an interview that was supposed to be about 40 minutes. And we ended up talking for about an hour and 20 minutes.
Right.
So great guy to talk to. And he was cool to just carry on with that. I would say the same of Rick Emmett, who in actual fact I interviewed some time back. Sadly, that interview never actually got published. And I really feel, my heart goes out to Rick for the time that he took to speak to me. And I was just inundated with review materials at the time. And I was asked to give the tape to the site that I was reviewing for at the time, and it just never got posted. So I still have that in my archives, if you will. But
good
sad
stuff.
It never got posted.
Might see that one yet still?
Who knows? But Brian Howe from Bad Company, he was a good interviewee, and he actually comes from my hometown of Portsmouth as well.
Okay.
So a lot of common ground there. Marco Mendoza, who's played with anyone from Whitesnake, Ted Nugent, the Soul Circus Band that featured Neil Sean on guitar, Jeff Scott Soto on vocals, it was just phenomenal. I mean, Marco's a great guy. He's a great bass player. He's a really nice guy. And, of course, Scott Gorham, who you've interviewed yourself.
Sure.
Fantastic guy. And
absolutely
and
is.
Right. And meeting up with Lizzie when they came through just recently with Judas Priest, just late last year, was absolutely fantastic. Great guys. Fantastic. Really nice guys. It was great to finally meet up with Brian Downey and have a nice chat with him. Spoke to Darren Wharton at length, and of course Scott, and the new guys too. So very good, very good.
Kind of curious about what you have coming up. Are there any big interviews pending that we should keep an eye out for? I believe, well, you mentioned the Mick Box thing, and we, of course, we don't have any idea what's going to happen with the Rick Emmett thing, but just kind of wondering what you might have in the works. Anything that you can divulge to us at this point? Or
well, well, since this is probably, I don't know when this is going to go out, but I guess there's a couple coming up. I'm hoping to talk to Michael Schenker again.
Nice.
Now, I spoke to Michael Schenker about 3 years ago now when I wrote for one of the other sites, and I'm hoping to line that interview. The management has agreed to, and they just need to set a time up and a date with Michael. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's been, as I say, it's been about 3 years since I spoke to Michael last time. And that was an interesting interview because he said at the time when I called him, he was driving down the autobahn about 110 miles an hour. He was talking to me on his cell phone. So
wow.
They called him Mad Mickey, I guess, sometimes. So now you know why, maybe. But so there's one. There's another one that I kind of have to keep under wraps right now, and I can't announce who it is because this guy hasn't spoken to anyone for quite some time, and I'm hoping to speak to the guy this coming Saturday afternoon. And I know that doesn't do you any favors, but
well, that's going to keep people checking out the blog, right?
Exactly.
Find out who it is. So
I hope so, and it's all very good stuff, and there's another guitarist I'd like to mention while we're on the phone, and his name's Stuart Smith. Now, not too many people may know of the Stuart Smith, but he's got his side project, which is called Heaven and Earth. And if anyone ever checks out Heaven and Earth, the first album, if you know the project, then you'll know it's a phenomenal album in terms of multiple players on that album. He's got a who's who of guest list players on that album. And people like Jolyn Turner on vocals. He's got Kelly Hansen on vocals. A whole bunch of different people. Keith Emerson plays keyboards on a track. You name it. He's got Howard Leeds from Heart on there. So many people. Unbelievable. But he's been touring with the U.S. version of Sweet.
Okay.
Featuring Steve Priest on bass. And I actually met up with these guys when they played the Stars and Stripes Festival here in Mount Clemens, and actually got to spend the afternoon and evening with these guys. And it was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. And Stuart and I have become very good friends since then. So I'm hoping to interview Stuart in due course. He actually had some lessons from Richie Blackmore.
Oh, wow.
He said they weren't lessons. He said they just jammed together, but I think other people may say they were lessons, but he's very, very influenced by Richie Blackmore's playing.
Yeah.
So anyone that's a fan of Richie Blackmore's playing should definitely check out the Heaven and Earth project.
Sure. Sounds good. So where can listeners find Chambers of Rock on the web?
Okay. It's www.chambersofrock.blogspot.com. com.
Really appreciate you being on the show, Alan.
Excellent. Thank you for your time, Big JD. It was a lot of fun talking to you.
All right. Take care.
All right. You too. All the best.
If rock is what does it for you, then Chambers of Rock is your fix. Check out Alan's blog at chambersofrock.blogspot.com. I'm Big JD. I'll see you next week here on You Talking to Me. Thanks for listening.